It's 10:06 and good morning. This is Utah Politics Now. I'm Leslie Thatcher along with my co-host Renee Bodley. 5 days away from Election Day in both Summit and Wasatch counties voting by mail this year. That means many of you listening right now may have already cast your ballot.
That's why we're straying from our normal format. Instead of having candidates in with us today, we're going to talk to some of the leading public policy influencers and opinion crafters in our state. We'll get their thoughts on whether Utah really is a toss-up in the presidential race, why Democrats are once again struggling for standing in our congressional and Senate races, and some of the big factors in our statewide races this year.
It's all coming up right after these messages.
Support for KPCW comes from Rocky Mountain Power, longtime energy providers working to make renewable energy available to every Utahan. Learn about renewable energy choices at utahsolarworks.com.
Hi, this is Angela from Peak Art and Frame, longtime supporters of KPCW. Peak Art and Frame offers custom picture framing, rush options, hanging and delivery services, and in-house designers. Open Monday through Saturday, located in the Walmart Shopping Center, 649-0801 or peakartandframe.com.
The 44th Annual Park City Ski and Snowboard Swap, November 4th through 6th at Basin Recreation Fieldhouse in New Park. Early equipment check-in begins October 31st through November 3rd at Jan's and Cole Sport Park Avenue locations, continuing on Friday, November 4th from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Basin Fieldhouse. Visit ParkCitySkiSwap.com for details. Proceeds benefit the Park City Ski Team, a nonprofit organization, a proud supporter of KPCW.
Welcome back to Utah Politics Now on KPCW. I'm Renee Bodley with my co-host, Leslie Thatcher. As promised, we have a distinguished panel of guests joining us this morning. If you like to talk politics, you're going to like the next hour.
Here's the lineup. We've got Boyd Matheson. He's president of Sutherland Institute, a 20-year-old Utah-based public policy research organization supporting limited government, private property rights, and personal responsibility. He has also served as chief of staff for Utah Senator Mike Lee of Washington, D.C., and most recently built a successful political consulting firm advising national and state elected officials and candidates. He's in studio. On the phone with us, we have Rachel Sanders. She's executive director of the Alliance for a Better Utah, a group that was formed about 5 years ago to improve the lives of all Utahns by ensuring balance, transparency, and accountability in Utah politics, policy, and government. Prior to joining Better Utah, Rachel developed the Family Liaison and Outreach Program, Promise South Salt Lake for South Salt Lake City.
Also joining us in studio is George Pyle. George has been an editorial writer, columnist, and blogger for the Tribune's opinion section since 2002. That's the Salt Lake Tribune. He's also done a stretch as a talk show host, so you're comfortable in front of a microphone there, published a book on the ongoing flaws of U.S. agriculture policy, and in 1998 was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize for editorial writing. Also in studio, Hal Boyd, the opinion editor of the Deseret News and a featured columnist. He's a graduate of Yale Law School and co-author of several books, including the forthcoming Are Christians Mormon? And College for the Commonwealth, Why Higher Education Matters for Democracy. Thank you for being here this morning.
Great to be with you.
Thank you.
Our first question, Utah traditionally votes Republican for president. Will that change this year? Is Utah really a toss-up state? Boyd Matheson, we'll start with you.
I think it's going to be interesting come Tuesday. I think the betting odds right now, I actually would say that Evan McMullen has the inside track to do something that hasn't been done in Utah for a long, long time, a third-party candidate winning. I think Donald Trump will take second, and Hillary Clinton will repeat what her husband Bill did and end up third in the state.
George, you want to?
The polls, I mean, we're within the margin of error on the polls, and sometimes Trump is ahead and sometimes McMullen is ahead. McMullen is the favorite son, as they used to say in politics. He's from Utah by way of the CIA and back in Utah again. And he came forward when, like a lot of other Republicans, he looked at Donald Trump and he said, I don't know who this guy is, but he's no Republican. He's certainly not conservative in the old Utah way of thinking. And somebody else has to stand up and run as a real Republican. So he stood up to do so. And because he's from Utah and because, Trump came in a distant, speaking of coming in third, yeah. Trump came in a distant third in the caucuses in Utah. And so you would think, well, okay, there's an opening for somebody else. And Evan McMullen is coming through that opening.
Hal Boyd, your opinion on Evan McMullen, or who will take Utah?
Yeah, I think Evan McMullen is surging, certainly, here in the state. And it's interesting. I've sort of characterized Evan McMullen as, you know, Mitt Romney meets Karl Rove meets Jason Bourne. And for a variety of reasons, I think that that's a fitting explanation. And I believe that's why he's so successful. I think that combination plays very well here in the state. However, one thing that I think is not necessarily factored into a lot of the calculus regarding who will win is the fact that you can vote straight party ballot. And a lot of people will opt out of that here in Utah because of the contested election. But the ability to just sort of check the box, I think, may be a factor that that plays well for Donald Trump here.
But maybe we can bring this into it a little bit with regard to Evan McMullen. And Rachel, we'll start with you. Just this whole notion about how people, Democrats in the state, really want to vote for Hillary Clinton, and yet they see maybe a very close race, Utah only having 6 electoral votes. Would that make a difference, though? I mean, the last count I saw, it was narrowing. And so if, Rachel, if Evan McMullen were to take Utah, that at least takes 6 votes away from Donald Trump, but yet still very difficult for a Democrat to check the Evan McMullen box, or no?
You know, I've spoken with Republicans and Dems, and I know they're on both sides. People are really leaning towards Evan McMullen, and there are some who've been diehard Bernie Sanders fans who are really struggling to also vote for Hillary Clinton. And so I think we've had this very interesting dynamic in this election where we have the split within both of the parties, and then there have been contention in between each of the parties. And so this has been a very interesting election, right, because that's not actually happened this way before. And so now it's really a toss. So I think that if Evan McMullen takes Utah, I actually do think that's actually a hit against Hillary and not against Trump, because I actually don't believe that Utah, maybe it's the eternal optimist in me, but I don't believe that Utah will vote for Donald Trump. I don't believe that they will say that he represents Utah values, et cetera. And so I actually think that's a hit against Hillary, and I do think it matters.
Let's just talk a little bit more about the rift that Donald Trump has created here in with Utah Republicans. Boyd, Senator Mike Lee, running for re-election, has not endorsed him. Earlier this week, some of Utah's top Republicans, including Senator Hatch, Congressman Rob Bishop, and Chris Stewart, speaking at a rally, urging others to unite around Trump. Noticeably absent, of course, Governor Gary Herbert and Congressman Jason Chaffetz, who recently flip-flopped on Trump. So what does it say for those Republicans who aren't, quote, coming home?
I think it's interesting because the question then becomes, what is home? And I think that both Utah Republicans and Utah Democrats are struggling with is that place called home? Because I don't think that they're connecting either with Hillary or with Trump, obviously, in terms of authenticity, likability, and trust. Leadership looks different in Utah. And whether you're liberal or conservative, there's still a style of leadership and a type of leadership that Utahns are longing for. And so this coming home argument is very much about the party of the past. And it's sort of like taxi drivers versus Uber drivers. There used to be some real cachet in being a card-carrying Democrat or a card-carrying Republican. Neither party has given Utahns a good reason to affiliate, and particularly with younger voters, the millennials are really flocking to Evan McMullen in particular because they have no connection to the party. So I think what you saw at the Capitol was those who were trying to hold on to, we have a party, this is it, and so we need to stick with that, versus those that are saying, you know what, this is about principle first and last.
And how do you see that rift that Trump has created among the state's Republicans?
Yeah, I think, well, certainly whenever you're saying you need to come home, someone needs to come home, that's not a good sign. They need to, you know, they should already be there, especially when it's a week away from election. And I think it's a serious rift, and frankly, it's going to take a lot of postmortem after the election to figure out both, I think with both parties, where they're at and how to kind of bring in a coalition that can win on a national scale. Right now, the Republicans, the electoral map, and we'll see what happens, but the electoral map is very disfavorable toward Republicans winning a national election. So that's something they'll have to think about going forward.
Before we let George and Rachel chime in on this rift between Republicans pro-Trump, not pro-Trump, a question, why aren't state Democrats better able to capitalize on this division in the Utah Republican Party? You have people like Jason Chaffetz who said, I can't look my 15-year-old daughter in the eye and endorse Donald Trump, and then 20 days later he says, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. There seems to be just really good fodder there for the state Democratic Party to pounce. I don't think we're seeing that happen. George, your thoughts on that?
Well, there isn't enough of a state Democratic Party to pounce. I mean, they're not well organized. They don't do a very good job of recruiting candidates. I happen to think that their congressional delegation, their candidates for Congress this year are pretty good, but nobody knows about them because the party doesn't have enough organization and money and advertising and legwork and ground game to get that word out there. The fact that the state is so horribly gerrymandered to the point where you can't even build one Democratic district out of the state. I mean, I did the math 2 years ago. If you add the Republican and Democratic votes in for all the split up districts, if you add the Democratic and Republican votes in Salt Lake and Summit counties, the Democrats win overwhelmingly. But those counties are split up. The legislature deliberately split up Salt Lake County to so there wouldn't be a Democratic congressman from Utah. I mean, even counting Jim Matheson, we've never had a Democratic congressman from Utah. And with no base, with no visible elected Democrat anywhere, it's really hard to build a party with nothing.
Rachel Sanders, Alliance for a Better Utah, has been working on redistricting issues. Do you think you'll make progress in that regard when it comes to drawing our district lines?
Well, I think redistricting is it is one of the hardest issues, especially here in Utah. And I think that unless we get an outside panel, you know, that is outside the legislature, that then we aren't going to have any change, because I don't think that the Republican run Utah is going to decide, yeah, let's go ahead and let an outside party redraw those lines. It's advantageous for them, and I think they're going to keep that as long as they possibly can. And as far as the idea of the Democratic Party not pouncing, I think that the Democratic Party just in general on a national level, and this will make me wholly unpopular if I'm not already, is that the Democratic Party has a hard time. They just tout statistics, 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 and they don't really get a frame so they connect with people. And you see that in Hillary often. Whereas the Republican Party historically has been very, very good at helping people connect to the policies and to get into their hearts and to bring the sense of what is right and what is good. And as simplistic as that sounds, people don't change the way they vote and the way they behave based on numbers. They change it by based on how they feel. I always say that if numbers worked, every diet I'd ever been on would have worked, right? But I have to change that. And I honestly think that's the failure of the Democratic Party nationally and especially here in Utah. They've failed to connect these issues personally with themselves, with their constituents, with moderate Republicans, et cetera.
Boyd, you wanted to chime in there.
Yeah, just because I don't want Rachel to feel like she's the only one who will be hated today. So, so I'll be an equal opportunity offender. because I have actually said for 2 years now, if I were a national Democratic strategist, I would circle Utah on the map because there are enough of the dysfunctions going on within the Utah Republican Party that there is going to be this space to really talk about principles. And I think one of the fascinating things for all of us to watch coming out of next week is both of the political parties are going to be digging themselves out of a massive hole. It's been so polarizing, but it may end up being the greatest thing for our civic discourse because it's going to create this space for some dialogue just about principles and policies, not about party stuff, but about mm-hmm. principles and policies. And Utahns and the American people are starving for that kind of dialogue. They'll never ask for it in a Dan Jones poll or a, you know, Pew Research paper, but they're starving for it. And when they get it, it rings true. So I think it's going to be a very interesting time here in Utah over the next 2 years to see who leads out in terms of principles and elevated dialogue, because whoever gets there first completely changes the game.
I want to go back just to this notion, though, of redistricting. I mean, that's going to happen here, what, in four more years, right? Another redistricting of the state done with the census. It is in the Republicans' best interest to have the districts, as George was talking about, where we, you know, we talk about congressional races. There is no race. I mean, it's a total misnomer when you look at the numbers of the congressional races. District 1 with Rob Bishop up 58% to 21% compared to Peter Clemens. Jason Chaffetz's district up, you know, 72% to 18% over Stephen Tyron. Chris Stewart leading businesswoman Charlene Alboron 58% to 27%. While I say it's in the Republicans' best interest to maintain these congressional districts as they exist, isn't it more important, though, that we actually have discussion about issues and policies that are important to all Utahns? You want to take that on, Hal?
Oh, absolutely. I think people on both sides of the aisle feel that if you just have a monopoly in politics, that you don't get the best ideas floating forward, and that sometimes you fall victim to groupthink. Now, I don't want to say that all Republicans act in lockstep or think in lockstep. There's quite a bit of intellectual diversity, as we've talked about, and divisions within the party and those discussions. But I think it's in Utah's best interest, and I think many people feel this way, to have a robust and strong Democratic Party. And some of that is laid to bear at the feet of the Democratic Party for not doing what it needs to do to create candidates who play well in the state and the various districts. But I think also a lot of it has to do with Republicans maybe taking advantage of the overwhelming support that they have here. So I think those are several factors that, really come to fruition when you have a situation that some have characterized as gerrymandering. And I think there's a good case for that moniker to be associated with it. But I think there's also some element to the Democratic Party where it needs to choose candidates that will play well. And I think they have many opportunities to do that post November 8th, when there's going to be a lot of people who are second guessing their affiliation with the Republican Party here in Utah.
George, you want to jump in there, though? I mean, what do we do come, 2020 to see if we can get some change within the state?
Well, the only way that, the legislature, by the Constitution, that you have a census every 10 years, and then every legislature is supposed to reapportion its congressional districts and its own districts, and other things like Board of Education districts and things like that, it's just goes against human nature to expect the Republicans or the Democrats to say, well, we're going to be fair to everybody, and we're going to really draw congressional districts and legislative districts by areas of interest, by places where people have something in common, but geographically contiguous districts. I used to live in New York, and they gerrymander just as bad, except they kind of scratch each other's back in New York so that, okay, this is a safe Democratic district, this is a safe Republican district. And the state is pretty well split, Republican-Democrat. They don't get any more done than they do in Utah because they're at such loggerheads and they're so split. And really, in New York, the governor, the president of the speaker of the assembly, and the president of the Senate make all the decisions, and everybody else in the legislature just fights for committee chairmanships. So everywhere you go, no matter which party is in charge, they're going to play to their own advantage and try and get the advantages and the perks and the chairmanships and the opportunities for campaign contributions the best they can. Some states are going now to an independent commission. They have things like retired judges or something like that, and with computers, and with, this becomes a wonk IT kind of thing where they draw districts based on population, on making them geographically compact, and they don't even look at who's Republican and who's Democrat, and that just falls where it might. And then if you would do that in Utah, you would be much more likely to have all of Salt Lake County and a little bit more, because you would need that to have a full congressional district, be a congressional district. And in that, you would probably have a competitive race. You would probably have something that people would describe as a real Democrat versus somebody that people would describe as a center-right Republican, and the district would probably be up for grabs. And at least it would be one place where a real Democrat would have an option and have a chance to win, and around that you could build a party. But absent that, I don't see how it's going to change.
Hal?
I think that's very interesting, but I would say that the redistricting is something that the Democrats may not be able to control. And so for the Democratic Party, I think it's advantageous or pragmatic to think about it, of who are the candidates that we can put forward that may actually have a chance in the state and in the various districts. And start with that while working on the redistricting issue. But certainly start with who can we find who is going to be in the center, is still a Democrat, but in the center, that will play well in the state. And I think they could really make some headway in the state of Utah if they kind of took that angle.
Yeah, and you could do that at the legislative level, much easier if you do it at the congressional level. And there are supposedly, to hear the people who are closer to it than I am, the Democrats do feel good about some of their legislative races, some of their state house races this year, partly because they think Donald Trump has turned off so many people that that might go on down the ballot, and partly because they feel better about the candidates that they've recruited. So, you know, you get a legislature that's a little bit more Democratic, a little bit more split, so that the Republicans who are in charge have to once in a while look across the aisle and say, okay, what do you guys want to do? That could be a big change.
You're listening to Utah Politics Now here on KPCW. We'll be back with our guest talking a little bit more about media and information and how we get it. Stay tuned.
This is Earl Foote, founder of Nexus IT, a proud sponsor of Cool Science Radio on KPCW. Nexus IT provides comprehensive cybersecurity solutions to help protect your business from hackers and today's internet-borne security threats. More information at nexusitc.net or at 435-487-9099.
This is Steve Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We continue to be proud supporters of KPCW, our local source for Park City news. Our agents are Summit and Wasatch County's source for real estate, and we can be reached at bhhsutah.com.
Funny man Mike Guido is coming to the Egyptian Theater to do comedy. No, it's not our way of slipping an ethnic slur past the censors. His name is actually Guido. And he's being joined by the lovely Frances DiLorenzo, who is a beautiful, Guidette. Okay, that time it was us. But listen, you can't have Jewish and black comedians every time. It gets old. So think of the comedy shows on November 4th and 5th as The Rockies Meets the Sopranos. In other words, maybe you should come to the shows because it would be a shame if you didn't and then something bad happened. The Egyptian Theater is a nonprofit organization and a KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to Utah Politics Now on KPCW. I'm Renee Bodley here with Leslie Thatcher, my co-host. We've got a great lineup for you this morning. In studio with us, we have George Pyle, editorial writer, columnist, and blogger for the Salt Lake Tribune's opinion section. Hal Boyd, the opinion editor of the Deseret News, also a featured columnist and author. Boyd Matheson, president of the Sutherland Institute. And on the phone, we have Rachel Sanders, the executive director of the Alliance for a Better Utah. We are interested in your questions. Here's the number to call, 435-655-8255. Again, 435-655-8255. Here's your chance to get your burning political questions answered from the people who really know what they're talking about.
So in a recent column on CNN.com, the writer postulated that the traditional model of he said, she said journalism, in which news reports simply put both sides of a story against one another, has been thrown out the window this election in favor of a more aggressive journalism that seeks to prioritize accuracy over balance. Let's talk a little bit about with the media folks here. How would you describe political journalism today as a result of election 2016? George, you want to start?
Well, I think that the amount of things that Donald Trump has said that just flat aren't true has finally empowered some in the media, and aside from the opinion game that we're in, to say that's not true. When Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and everybody else, they said at a rally that, the rate of immigration was this, or the size of the national debt was that. And more and more reporters are now feeling empowered to put in their stories, he erroneously said, or that's not true, or that's not accurate. And now we have people working for the Poynter Institute and the Washington Post, and they're fact checkers, and that's their job, to go back over a speech, a debate, a rally, a campaign appearance, and assign true, not true, pants on fire, four Pinocchios to statements made by politicians. And there have been enough challenges in this election all of a sudden now being a fact checker is something that journalists aspire to, instead of having this idea that, well, I'm not supposed to say who's being truthful and who's lying. I'm supposed to quote the Democrat and quote the Republican. And if they call each other liars, fine, I'll get that out there. But it's not on me to say who's lying. Now I think, the opinion game, we've done that. And now more and more in the news pages, reporters are starting to realize that guy just told a whopper of a lie, and I'm not serving my readers if I don't point that out.
Yeah. Are you seeing the same thing?
Very much so. I think in the news media, people have observed that Donald Trump's rhetoric is sort of beyond the bounds of what has been traditionally associated with political discourse. And that has resulted in straight reporting having some editorializing in it. So the Associated Press, right after Donald Trump began the rhetoric of that the election may be rigged, they in the beginning said in a major, I don't know the exact language, but sort of in a major breach of political rhetoric or protocol, Donald Trump said today that he feels the election could be rigged. And so, I mean, right in the headline, that's the Associated Press, which is sort of the straight shooting, straight reporting news institution. And so I think his rhetoric has presented a real challenge to reporters on how to grapple with that.
So much of this election and this campaign, though, has been waged on social media, where we just see opinion thrown out there, not based on facts. So as a result, have newspapers lost even more subscribers as we kind of follow the campaign on social media?
Well, whether it's social media or cable TV or anything else, we have had a problem where people are tuning in to media that tells them what they want to hear, that echoes what they already think, that reinforces their prejudices. And this is human nature. People do this. But supposedly in American press, particularly, less so in Europe, but quite a bit here, newspapers, the Associated Press, you don't have different newspapers for different political affiliations. You have one newspaper in a community, and they're supposed to either play it down the middle or quote everybody, and sometimes it becomes he said, she said, and what Jay Rosen calls a view from nowhere. And, you know, instead of saying, you know, I went someplace, I learned something, here it is, it's like this disembodied voice that kind of tells you nothing. But we're trapped in this more and more in the idea that I just watch Fox News, I just watch MSNBC, I just am friends on Facebook with people who I already know agree with me and will send me all these memes and pictures either making fun of Donald Trump or making fun of Hillary Clinton, and I don't see anything that is down the middle or challenging of my worldview because it makes me uncomfortable and I don't want to look there.
I think it's really interesting, too, that you are starting to see some of the networks and some of the publications start to recognize that they're going to have to shift, that they can no longer just put up a liberal and a conservative and let them shout talking points past each other for 6.5 minutes and call it a segment of TV or radio. And so they're starting to shift. You've seen things like CNN disconnecting with Donna Brazile because they thought, no, that's across the line. You've seen it at Fox News and other places as well. And so because the American people have so many choices of where they can go get their information, I think it is going to force the media folks to say, wait a minute, what is our purpose? What is our role? We got to get out of this left-right shouting match stuff and really start having a conversation with the American people.
Let's go to Rachel Sanders on the phone. Rachel, what have you seen as far as people you talk to getting their information? Are they doing more traditional media, more social media?
Everyone that I speak with is getting they're all on social media. And this is so problematic because it doesn't, just because it's written on the internet does not make it true. But that is sort of the belief, right? That if it's on there, it must be true. And another thing I really want to hit on is that Donald Trump at one point was credited for saying that, you know, good media is preferred, but any media is better than none. And we have constantly, the media has constantly covered all of his very outlandish claims and all of his lies and all of his behavior. This is something that that the media has constantly done that has really, really helped promote Donald Trump and his message, because I do know, I come from a small town in Texas, and I know what people do. They come home from a hard day's work and they turn on Fox News. And so if you have a population who is not, it's not readily available to be informed and to be accurate, then you're going to have a population who is just going to get fed exactly what the panel is saying, but people who already agree with them, who are on their side, who make fun of the same things that so-and-so makes fun of. So I hear all the Democrats make fun of, or that I know, not the party, make fun of people who are supporting Donald Trump and then vice versa. And it's really, it's not getting us anywhere, right? Because the reasons why people are supporting Donald Trump are probably valid. Not that he, what he's saying is true, but they're connecting at some level with, he's connecting with them at some level. And so we continue to do this divide. And so I do think that, yes, because people are not, they're not voting down party lines, we, the media is having to do something different besides just, you know, the liberal and the Dem. But we are still, in my opinion, missing the mark completely by not having this conversation about what it is that's so appealing and of Donald Trump, and what's so unappealing or appealing about Hillary Clinton, and what is, who is that connecting with and why? Because then that's the conversation we can have, because that's been about, that's about our principles as a nation. And anyway, so that's my 2 cents on that.
Just a reminder, we are waiting for our listeners to call in with their questions. The number is 435-655-8255. That's 435-655-8255. We were talking about national media coverage just then. Let's talk about local statewide media coverage. The fact that we've got these congressional races where the incumbents are so far ahead of their challengers, the fact that you can have an incumbent congressman put out something on Twitter and, as far as I'm aware, doesn't really go that challenged by local media. Hal and George, to what extent can you guys speak to the efforts on your newspaper's behalf to get congressmen, to get the incumbents, to get the candidates to talk, to respond to reporters' questions? Hal, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think we strive from, so in the Deseret News has a joint newsroom that's connected with KSL, KSL Radio, KSL Television. And I think they have been effective because they're able to sort of pool together on getting people on the record. And sometimes they miss it. You know, sometimes other stories come up. But they that joint newsroom is a very powerful, I think, tool to try to get people on the record and do the type of due diligence that needs to be done in the state. It's challenging. I mean, I think there are financial challenges to news media organizations, especially local reporting, on the helpful kind of day-to-day news reporting that people depend on to know about what's happening on Capitol Hill, what's happening in the mayor's office, what's happening in the governor's office. It's hard because I think resources are tight within news organizations. But they strive every day, and I mean, I go down there for their morning meetings, and you know, things are abuzz, and people are trying to do, but things fall through the cracks. But certainly, especially right now, leading up to an election, I mean, it's all hands on deck.
Yeah, neither paper has the staff that it had 10 years ago, so we don't have the reporting chops that we used to have to follow these things up. And also, we have a situation now, as you said, with social media and cable TV and everything. It used to be that if a congressman wanted to get a message through to his constituency, he had to talk to the local newspaper or newspapers, because that was the way you get the message out. Now they can just go right over our heads and go through Twitter and go through Facebook and go through Fox or MSNBC and do it that way, and they just go right over us. Now, in his defense, though, I will say Jason Chaffetz, who is probably the star of getting himself on TV, getting himself on Fox News, is also very responsive to our reporters. I mean, we've got his cell number. I'm not going to give it to you, but we've got his cell number.
He'll give it to you.
And he answers the phone. And like I said, I was in New York for a while. I used to say the most dangerous place in any room was between Charles Schumer and a camera. Well, now we say the same thing about Jason Chaffetz. And he'll get out there. But he will still play the traditional media, too, because it's a way to get his message across. But he doesn't need us the way his predecessor did 20 years ago.
Well, that's good to hear that he still talks to you, because given these outrageous splits that we're seeing in these so-called races, I mean, we can't even get Rob Bishop, who represents this, to talk to us. It's no. Like there's no interest in speaking to our constituents. So I guess if they see, it's like, well, I'm winning the race. I don't need to talk to you. I mean, that's really a danger to democracy, no? Right?
Well,
I mean,
it's a spiral. You get in a situation where we're talking about the majorities and Republican majorities in the legislature and voting and everything. You get to be where you're in charge, and then you use your power to stay in power. And Democrats would do it if they had the power as well. And to put a chink in that armor any place is really difficult. And I used to often criticize Democrats as shooting too high, people who would be a perfectly good candidate for the state legislature. Now I want to run for Congress. Run for the state legislature, run for county commission, you know, build that base, strengthen that, and then you might have, you know, a more even system. And in the media, too, I also I have a problem with, and you mentioned Donna Brazile, I think part of the problem with CNN particularly is they used to have a liberal and a conservative. Now they have a Democrat and a Republican. Mm-hmm. And really, in a lot of cases, they don't have anything they stand for except, I want to get my party nominated and I want to get my party elected because then I'll be in with power.
That's right.
You know, principle, policy, tax policy, deficit, climate change, defense policy, none of that is as important as being in with the winning team.
George really hits an important point. It was the biggest shock to me going back to Washington as a non-political person to walk in and recognize that most of the battles back there are not left and right. It's not liberal versus conservative. It's those in power against everything else. We often complain about the conflict in Washington. Conflict is not the problem. Collusion is the problem. And the lengths that the leaders of both parties would go to so that no incumbent would have to take a hard vote. I mean, I still remain convinced we could solve 94.5% of the immigration issue in an afternoon on the floor of the Senate and the House because everybody agrees. But both parties raise a lot of money off of it. They run wedge campaigns off of it, and that's the real challenge.
Yeah, we could solve immigration. We could make Social Security solvent. We could bring Medicare back to solvency. Just, you know, lock these guys in a room and say you're not coming out until you've solved. And they're not that far apart on a lot of these things. It's just that they don't want the other guy to get credit. They don't want the president to succeed. They don't want the Republicans to succeed.
And convincing us all that we're so divided that we can't do anything is what keeps them with all of the power, money, and influence.
Yeah, and it's easy if you're on one party to blame the other one because you can point to 20 examples why they did something they shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
And that, given that, and that's the popularity of Donald Trump right there, mm-hmm. right? About just, you know what, draining the swamp and let's get people in there who will actually change things up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is. People are looking for that kind of change and that kind of dynamic. But it is interesting that here in Utah, and we've had people from around the world come to this state to figure out why Utah is so resoundingly rejecting the nominees of both of the major parties. And I think it's because of what we do here. I mean, we deal with immigration. We deal with LGBT rights. We have those conversations, and we have a great economy, great civil society. And so people are saying, well, wait a minute, Utah's actually working better than almost anywhere. I mean, we have our problems, to be sure, but Utah's working, and so we're sort of inoculated from having to buy into this, it's all about the party and all about the power, because we know that the most important vote any of us will cast this year that's going to impact us and our community is who we vote for school board or who that county commissioner is. We know it's not dependent on who's sitting in the White House. It's who's sitting at the kitchen table that makes the difference. And so I think it changes the way we have those conversations, and that's how I think we change the game.
Rachel Sanders, how does this affect the dynamic for Alliance for a Better Utah? Your group tries to get the not-so-often-heard voice involved in these discussions. Do you think you'll have more success after this election year?
Well, I think it's been interesting this year, and I think we will have more success because what I really feel like, and I've been at this for 7 months now, so of course I come in and I shift and I change kind of what our focus has been. But really, our focus is to drive the narrative that's not being talked about. So we talk about this, you know, the party politics and the Dems versus the Republicans, people wanting to stay in power. But we're not talking about issues in a way that solve problems for the people who are actually affected by those issues. And so at Alliance for Better Utah, we are trying to drive that narrative of these are issues that are affecting everyday lives. This is what's happening on the ground. And so for, you know, Jason Chaffetz or whomever, I guess he's very responsive, but whatever our elected officials in Utah are not speaking to our local media, this is a sign that they don't feel like they need to, that they're so far removed and they're really trying to stay in power rather than actually fix some of the issues here in Utah. And we do have issues here in Utah, and we do have challenges, and they are affecting people. They're not affecting the Republicans per se, and they're, you know, up in Capitol Hill, et cetera. And so, for Alliance for a Better Utah, we're trying to sort of sit in the middle of the aisle and force people to have a conversation in the middle of the aisle rather than on just one side of the aisle or the other side of the aisle. And so, yes, I do think that after this election and after people have to really evaluate who they're going to vote for and why they're going to vote for them, I think we're going to have a much easier time doing that because we're all starting to sort of unhinge this idea of one party versus another and start to meet in that middle. I think people are much more eager to do so now.
Hal, do you have any addition to that?
Yeah, I would just say that's not just on the local level that politicians don't want to meet with the media. I think we've seen that Hillary Clinton this year has been very reluctant to meet, have press conferences. And, you know, Donald Trump, although he goes on Sean Hannity and other programs, they're usually very accommodating toward his opinions. And I think this is just a very troubling trend, because the reality is that there's market forces that make it such that people, it's cheaper to produce opinion content, and it's cheaper to produce content that is just agreeable rather than kind of hard journalism that asks tough questions. And frankly, it sells. The sort of the easier product sells. And so that becomes quite challenging from an economic standpoint for news media. So that's sort of an abstraction to the discussion, but it will have to be something that the nation looks at and news media organizations look at going forward on how do we help foster the type of conversations that draw politicians in, that want them to engage in substantive policy discussions and aren't gotcha journalism, and that allows people who are listening in to really get a sense for what these people are about and what the policies they have and what they offer to the American people.
And you've just given us the pitch that we make twice a year for public radio about
That's
how
right, and I'd like to take some time now.
So we appreciate that, but that you're exactly right. I mean, it's expensive to have a newsroom and people who, you know, get out there and start talking with people. I want to turn this around just a little bit because we've got just about 13 minutes left. If you do have a question, now would be the time to call at 435-655-8255. For those of those in Summit County, vote by mail is a new dynamic to this. I don't know if you're familiar with the group Voterize. It's a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization using Utah as a test market to get out the vote with the next generation of American voters. What they told us in an interview recently is that they're focused on getting better turnout among the 18 to 30-year-olds who don't carry around stamps or use the post office unless it's picking up a package that they've ordered online. So with the recent news reports that we're having less than expected early voting turnout, I mean, let's talk a little bit about how do we build a more inclusive and vibrant democracy with our youngest voters. Do you want to start with that, Rachel?
Coming from a community organizing background, I'm very familiar with Voterize. Every event we hold, we ask if they will come in and have a registration booth and engage whatever public they can. So I think that the millennials are issue-driven, right? They don't care about policies necessarily. And now this is, of course, painting with a very wide brush, but these are issues. They're struggling with paying back their student loans. They're struggling with getting jobs when they come out of college. They're struggling with healthcare issues. They're struggling with all kinds of issues. And you cannot engage a public based on things that they feel like don't affect them. And so the way to engage this group of people is to start to drive narratives on issues, or allow them to drive the narrative on the issues that bother them, and help them learn how to self-advocate in ways and to create an environment where they feel like they have power to affect change on those specific issues. And that is how you get that generation of millennials, that age group, that's how they're going to engage. They're not going to engage for Donald Trump. They're not going to engage for Clinton. They're not going to engage for another, you know, cold or heated discussion on things that they don't feel affect their everyday life. If it doesn't affect them, they don't have time for it because they're dealing with too many other things. And again, like I say, and I know this is painting with a wide brush, but this is community organizing at its basic. You walk in, you find out what the problems you feel like that the community thinks they're having. You tell them what they've got going for them. You figure out how to turn what it is you have into what it is you need to get what it is you want. And that's how you engage this group of people.
Do you have something to add, Boyd?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We often underestimate the millennials. We write them off as narcissistic, selfie-taking lot. But they're actually a very interesting group. They're far more communitarian and community-driven than their predecessors by far. They just do it very differently. Rather than, you know, going door-to-door or, you know, doing something in the community, their community is all online. So if they see a friend who needs money for a surgery, they're going to go do a GoFundMe, or they're going to do an ice bucket challenge. So they're actually very engaged. They're completely turned off by the political parties and how they're doing it. The thing that the millennials hate is the strident voices, because they recognize it's the strident voices at both ends of the political spectrum that usually keep us a safe distance, like Rachel said, of solving the problem. How does this actually impact my world and what I'm doing. And so I'm actually very hopeful for the millennials. I actually think they're going to be a significant force moving forward because they have some very interesting instincts that are kind of old school. With all the technology they have, they're very connected. And they just do it in a very different way. The key is how do you harness it and how do you channel it?
Well, I had two parents who read the paper every morning, and I started with the comics, went on to Dear Abby, and then before I'd start reading the local section, but kids don't do that anymore.
Well, we see some indication now that younger people will read a long story, they just won't read it on a piece of paper. They want it on their phone or their tablet, increasingly their phone. And so, you know, the Deseret News and the Salt Lake Tribune, you know, do the reporting you've always done, but figure out a way to make it read well on a tiny little screen. And, you know, and so you're tempted, does this need more graphics? No, graphics will slow down the page loading, so you don't want to do that. And so we're working our way through this. But the millennial generation will read a long story, will read a detailed analysis or a deeply reported story. They want to read it on their phone. They want to read it on their tablet. And you kind of feel bad because, you know, Utah really has been pretty good at making it easy to register, making it easy to vote by mail. But at the same time, you know, they're staring at their phone. They don't even see what came in the mailbox. We sent a ballot to your house. What? Mail? What's that? So, you know, it's not on my phone. So you got to find out a way to reach them. And now in Salt Lake and some other counties, you can actually, the voter registration deadline was Monday, I think. Mm-hmm. But in Salt Lake and some other counties, if you're not registered, you can show up at a voting place, which is not the traditional voting places because we're voting by mail, and register that morning. It's a pilot project in a few counties, and you'll have to check with your county clerk to see if you live in it. That word hasn't gotten out very well, but it's being run this year. So that day, you can go and register that morning and vote.
Hal Boyd, what kind of millennial engagement is the Deseret News seeing with its content?
Well, we you know, our readers, like most newspapers, are older, but we're trying very hard to make our material applicable and relevant to millennials. I think the interesting thing about millennials is they are in many ways apolitical or amorphous when it comes to politics. However, they very much are about sort of getting things done, and they're very innovative. However, they don't engage in kind of newspaper and reading the newspaper every day or debate. In many ways, they shy away from kind of harsh debate. You see this on college campuses where the trigger warnings and trying to create safe spaces. And so some of that kind of hard dialogue that maybe our political system has depended on for many years, they shy away from that. And that can be a positive thing that can create some social cohesion for them to get some things done. What I'd like to see is with regard to figuring out a way to engage millennials or get millennials to go vote is turning over millennials to come up with ideas. And I think convenience is so much about whether people vote. And you saw this on Duke University campus. There's a report recently that they moved the voting off campus and all of a sudden the numbers dropped down significantly, right? So, I mean, that right there is just if it's convenient, if it's on their campus, if it's around them, if it's on the phone, these are things that are going to really help millennials engage in the political process. And I think turn it over to them to see what they come up with.
You're listening to Utah Politics Now here on KPCW. We'll be back with a final wrap-up with our panel this morning.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, celebrating 25 years in Park City. San Francisco Design is happy to sponsor public affairs programming on KPCW. For 25 years, we have been providing home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. We're located on Bonanza Drive and at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
Hi, this is Colin Watkins from U.S. Bank, back to support our students of Park City High School with KPCW. We offer student accounts and parent banking solutions, including online and mobile banking and credit cards. U.S. Bank is located on the corner of Park Avenue and Deer Valley Drive, usbank.com, or 647-3726.
Executive Chef Todd Cosgrove here with Park Meadows Country Club, a KPCW supporter. Park Meadows prepares seasonally inspired menus in our dining room, lounge, and outdoor patio areas year-round. We also offer members dining menus for social events throughout the year. Social and golf memberships are available. 649-2460 or parkmeadowscc.com.
K- KPCW Main Street Music Crawl, presented by Red Ledges.
Saturday, November 12th, 7:30, until it's last call for you, Myrtle. Rockin', rollin', jumpin'. Celebrate all things local, local bars, local music, local radio.
No food served, eat at home.
Don't miss out on the party of the year. Tickets at kpcw.org.
Welcome back to Utah Politics Now on KPCW. We're going to wrap things up. We've got about 4 minutes left. We want to talk about newspaper endorsements. And Hal Boyd with the Deseret News, we're going to start with you. The DNews has a tradition of not endorsing political candidates, but you took an unusual step this year of asking Trump to get out of the race. And I think this was just about a month before the election. And here's a quote on that. "We are neutral on matters of partisan politics. We do, however, feel a duty to speak clearly on issues that affect the well-being and morals of the nation. Accordingly, today we call on Donald Trump to step down from his pursuit of the American presidency." Can you talk about the discussion the editors had with writing this editorial? What swayed you guys to do this?
Well, for a while, we had kind of sensed a real dissonance within our readership, within the electorate here in Utah, and we've discussed some of it today with regard to people feeling as though both the major party candidates don't fit their kind of value set. And so we had thought for a while, you know, is there something we can say uniquely that might be of benefit to our readership? And that kind of remained an open-ended question for quite some time. But then when the sort of lewd comments and video came to light of Donald Trump from 2005, we saw that although it certainly had political implications, we saw the moral implications of it and thought that we need to break from our 80-year tradition of not wading into political endorsement season and making a strong moral statement that this is beyond the pale. And I think the one real central part of that is the manifestation that if someone feels that they can contravene someone else's volition for their own self-indulgence, we saw that as the quintessence of despotism. And we felt strongly that we need to speak out and take a moral stand. And we did ask Donald Trump to step down. He hasn't listened. But we saw some pragmatic element to that the conservatives might have a better chance if Donald Trump had stepped down at that point and let someone else shoulder the sort of Republican Party going forward.
George Pyle of the Salt Lake Tribune endorsed Hillary Clinton. Has the Tribune ever endorsed a Republican?
Oh, yeah. Endorsed George W. Bush the second time. There was a hiatus there where the Salt Lake Tribune didn't do endorsements. This is before my time, but I am told that John Gallivan felt he owed the universe a debt for having endorsed Richard Nixon, and so we just dropped it for a while. They just stopped. And then when Media News and Dean Singleton took over management of the Tribune in 2002, I believe it was, they said, no, newspapers that have active editorial pages do endorsements, so we're going to start doing endorsements again. So the people who were mad at us for endorsing George W. Bush twice are wrong. We didn't endorse anybody the first time he ran. We did endorse him the second time, partly because he was personal friends with William Dean Singleton, and he felt that he knew the man, and the man was not the caricature that had been portrayed in the media, and he was going to endorse him. And then after that, he weighed in on as publishers do, with the local editorial board, and endorsed Barack Obama the first time. I think we were kind of maybe tilting toward endorsing Mitt Romney until the 47% tape came out. And
it's always the tape.
The editorial page editor walked in and said, it's off.
We're just going to spend the next minute here just with all of it. We'll start with you, Rachel. Maybe just a quick prediction, how Utah votes for president and the end result.
Well, obviously, I hope that Hillary Clinton is our next president, because I do not want my daughter to spend the next 4 years with Donald Trump as the role model for how women should be treated in the respect of others and diversity in the country. I would imagine actually that Utah would go with Evan McMullen. I think that they're very disenfranchised on both sides of the aisle, and this is Evan presents, he's LDS, he's many, many things, as everyone's gone over. So I think that I actually think Utah will probably go with Evan McMullen. But if not, it will be Hillary. I really don't believe that Utah will vote Trump.
Okay, Hal?
So I'll take the under there and say that Donald Trump pulls it out, but it'll be a close race.
And I think Evan will squeak past Donald, and Hillary will be third.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I think it may that may be enough to get the Republican Party nationally to really take a look at itself like it said it was going to do 4 years ago and say, you know, what is it that we really stand for?
Big thank you to all of our panelists this morning. It's been a great hour. You're listening to Community Radio KPCW Park City.